On today's episode of Back of the Bird, we are joined by recently retired NHL legend Rhys Dutch. Chat about his legendary career, his championships, his championship-winning goals. Also chat about some news and notes around the league. And finally, all three of us heading to training camp. This is episode 97 of Back of the Bird. Take your first ride and run, baby, run. You got a spine of steel and a roar of thunder.
All right, we're back. Episode 97. Holly, who do we got?
The mayor. You guys want to know who this guy is? Only Old Town Boston, Kevin Ross. We used to call him the mayor of Boston. This guy was an absolute electric factory.
Kevin Ross, like Toronto Kevin Ross?
No, oh, sorry, Kyle Ross.
I think Everyone's Kevin Ross listens to this too, so nice little free shout out for Kevin Ross.
There you go, hey, Roscoe.
And Kevin has played with everyone too. He's a beauty. I play with Roscoe too. He's played with everybody because he's played on every team. But no, Kyle Ross.
Roscoe is just catching ricochets.
Hey, it's okay. He can take it.
Who's sure Kyle? Fire Tell us about Kyle.
So he's a West Coast guy, unreal D training guy from New West. He lived in this apartment with Bubba Durnal, who you guys also won't know, but we need to get him on. He's an absolute legend. He's the guy that dyed his mustache pink for breast cancer awareness night, and his mustache was down like past his chin. And then another guy, Brendan Thenhouse. Anyways, we used to call him the mayor because this guy would just wheel around Boston, did pretty well for himself with the ladies, but he was just a riot. He would always do this. Again, I don't know if we're going to put this on YouTube, but he'd always do this dance move where he'd pull up his shirt and just kind of give like the belly roll. And it was the worst dance move. But the amount of chicks he pulled with this jelly roll shirt up. And then my brother loved it. So every time we would like be getting into it, he'd be like, Roscoe, give us the stomach roll, man. And he'd just be all blangled, giving the stomach roll in the middle of the bar in Boston. Anyways, this guy's a legend. So that's who's my 97 is, Kyle Ross.
All right, Kevin, Kyle Ross. This episode is yours. It's brought to you by Cottage Springs. Brief shout out to Cottage Springs. Again, we're rolling into the holiday season here. So all of our Canadian friends, get out there, grab the jacked up version, 7%. Bring it to your holiday party. Get everybody juiced up. Maybe put it in a little punch. We're getting into office Christmas party seasons coming just around the corner here. But again, enjoy responsibly. Also, bar down. Take a look. We got merch out there. We want you guys to try it. So we're working on getting you guys maybe a little discount for the holiday season here as well. So
stocking stuffers. Come on now.
Stocking stuffers.
Who doesn't want some stocking stuffers or a new hoodie?
I got to get you guys those hoodies. Maybe I'll drop them off this weekend when you guys are away, actually, because I got we got a little weird bye weekend this weekend. Second weekend of camp.
Actually, that'd be nice. You mind just moving into my house, helping Dory with the kids? That'd be great.
Can Evie babysit?
Yeah. I'm going to be throwing the kids around playing mini lacrosse sticks with them like Evie and Evie and Dice there. But let's just jump into it. Paulie, how are you doing?
Doing good, buddy. Hopping on a flight tomorrow morning. Denver for the week, man. So, yeah, just getting excited, getting all my ducks in a row, packing up. But, yeah, man, just put the finishing touches on some workouts, and then we're in one.
I love it. It's happening,
eh? Yeah.
Donnie, getting excited?
Yeah, man. I'm pumped. Paul and I are on opposite travel schedules tomorrow. I'm flying out of Denver as he's flying in. So, we start this weekend as well. First of four for us. And yeah, it's funny, man, especially like when you're playing in the summer, like this is so much lacrosse, so much travel, yada, yada. And then you're out for a couple of weeks and it's like, let's start going again. So excited to see everybody. And real quick, Paul made a nice little reference to the YouTube. Please go check us out on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. It really does help us on YouTube specifically. There's certain things we can't do until we reach certain thresholds of subscribers. So we really need all the support we can get on there. And And also, our Spotify listeners know this already, but you can watch the podcast on the Spotify app. So if you're on your phone or whatnot, you normally use Spotify, you can watch the video that way as well. Another fun way to consume the podcast. So, other than that, life's good with me.
Love it.
Just ready to start balling again.
Unbelievable. I'd be remiss if I didn't give a shout out here. Right before we recorded this, I was over. We do our little, every couple months, we do a little neighborhood dinner. We all get together.
You too, guys.
So I had to excuse myself early from the neighborhood dinner. So shout out to the Western Battery area neighbors there. They said they're going to listen to this as their first podcast. They'll probably only listen the first 5 minutes, then they'll be lost. But and I'm sure the Kevin Kyle Roscoe start will be fantastic for them to jump into. I love it.
Hey, speaking of just another classic, that neighbor story of mine apparently got a lot of people going. I got a lot of DMs about the
neighbor. I haven't heard the story yet. I got to go.
Oh, you didn't hear? I mean, I'll retell it again, but yeah, anyways, just classic mistaken identity, and my neighbor just turned out to be a maniac. Okay.
Who told me that? Oh, it was Smitty told me at camp. He's like, dude, did you hear what Paulie did? Like yelling at like somebody, like he played hockey with him, then he went nuts or something. So
yeah,
I'm going to have to go listen back to it.
Listen to it. It's an all timer. I haven't seen him since, thank God. But
man, we got one guy we're going to get on here, and I'm going to talk to him about Connor Farrell. Guy I didn't know very well, but roomed with this weekend. What a fucking character this guy was, man. Some of the stuff he was pulling, the pranks he was doing, just talking to random people walking down the street. I mean, it was, oh my God, it was unbelievable. I had some of the funnier laughs, just like,
I was, you're the only one that had camp last week. So how did camp go for you, bud?
It was good, man. Felt good to just go joke around with guys, like the boys again, and kind of get to, obviously, a new situation, trying to meet some guys and get to know guys, and trying to be a bit quieter in the room to start, which is not an easy task for me. It was good to just kind of battle too, like play lacrosse again, with the idea of like proving yourself it was fun. I'm sore shit, but like I said in the interview here, I timed up a nice little Monday lunchtime hot yoga class downtown Toronto. You can't go wrong.
No. Where?
Where was it? It's the place is literally called Be Hot.
In Liberty Village?
No, it was like kind of just tucked behind the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Okay. I mean, I'm thinking hot yoga in Liberty Village would be...
Oh, I'm sure that place. I don't think I'm hot enough to go to the hot yoga in Liberty Village. Donnie,
just a couple more sessions at Be Hot.
You gotta be hot to go to Be Hot. It was good week, fun week. We're oddly enough we're off this weekend, so it'll be interesting. But there's not a ton of that going on in the league. Obviously, I think Toronto kicked off. Wasn't there a third team that did?
Bunch of teams did. Vegas kicked off. Toronto kicked off. Thought Vancouver kicked off too.
I think they did as well. Yep.
They might be doing the midweek stuff as well.
Yeah. Yeah. You might be right. I know, like, obviously Toronto, they kind of like you guys too. They'll just kind of do now like once a week type of thing. So. Not like me and Donnie, we're going Road Warriors for 4 weekends in a row.
I'm actually, we can cover this on next week's pod, but, so I've been in, our listeners know I've been in Colorado, for a little bit here. I'm actually coming back to Ontario next week and I'm driving home. So, Monday, starting the road trip home. Cause I got a Canadian, it doesn't matter. I need to bring my car back to Canada. And it's been here. So,
Donnie needs places to stay, folks. So
I got a 22-hour I got a 22-hour road trip.
Yeah, let's get Donnie some places to stay.
Yeah, so I'm going here to Omaha Monday, Omaha to Chicago Tuesday, Chicago to home on Wednesday. So,
hey, you're gonna go through my neck of the woods. Hey, you're gonna go through Windsor.
Sounds
like we're not recording next week.
I'll be at hotels. It's actually not that bad of travel. The challenge is going to be playing next weekend. So I got to make sure I find some decent meals and maybe try to sweat a little bit in there too. But Road Warriors, man, back to it.
Hey, if you're somebody on here who owns a gym in Omaha, where did you say you're going next?
Omaha or Chicago or anywhere in between that. Yeah.
There we go. Hit Donnie up. Outside of that, I guess going on in the NLL, that bunch of different lacrosse beauties from around the kind of different lacrosse leagues or communities, whatever you want to call it. They rang the closing bell at the New York Stock Exchange. That's kind of cool.
It was cool because everyone was together.
Yeah.
Like NLL, PLL was a rare.
See who was in the front though?
Rabel wasn't looking at anybody though. He didn't look at Frood once. He had his nose up in the air.
That guy, back of the bus, buddy.
Yeah.
They're fighting over the gavel to bring
it. Yeah. That was good. I did get a good laugh out of that. Everything's calculated, but it is cool. It was cool to see them all getting together. Again, we haven't really talked about it, but you can see these in the episode title. We got Reese Dutch on, all-timer, sure shot Hall of Famer here. The guy's, part of the 400, 600 club. That's no joke. That's a lot of points and goals, assists. So congrats on a great career to Dutchie. You'll hear from him. Kind of, we go down memory lane with him, which was pretty cool to kind of see him go through it too. Didn't talk about all the different things that happened throughout his career.
He's got an awesome memory too, by the way.
Yeah.
That part is really cool. Hearing him tell the story, obviously you're going to remember the big moments, but hearing the story of the goal, I thought was very cool. And just, he remembers years, games, statistics very well. And I always find that really, really cool when our guests just have everything kind of at the tip of their tongue.
Yeah, no doubt. I agree. You guys, Paulie, I saw you. That was pretty adorable. You dressing up as a firefighter and Mac too.
Yeah, classic. Real original on my behalf. No, I mean, we were doing the family costumes for a bit. We had a couple good ones. We did the Zoolander one year. We did a Jungle Book last year. And then my mother-in-law, Mac is obsessed with fire trucks and firefighters. But so my mother-in-law just got him a fire costume. So I was like, all right, guess I'm going as a firefighter too. But, and then we had Coco as Sparky as the Dalmatian. But yeah, it was good, man. So this is the first year he kind of got it. So it was kind of cool. We were wheeling around with a bunch of buddies and their kids. So yeah. He just got like a sack full of candy. He like doesn't even eat candy, but he's just got a sack, like so much candy now. And then the way our street's like set up, we don't really get kids. We're like a through street and we actually don't have sidewalks. So everyone just goes around. So I bought like a Costco size candy thing like a month ago. I literally handed out to like two kids. One was my next door neighbor. Wow. So now
you guys almost have to get like signs to guide people down your street.
I know. And it's like, well, it's tough too. Cause like
come get the jumbo O. Henry's, boys.
I know. And it's tough too. Cause our street's like dark because of like all the big trees and like block out the light. So I think it just looks like super scary anyways. So I just have like a shit ton of candy.
You should just stand in the middle of your street dressed as Mike Myers with just like a bowl of candy below you and just see who decides to make the trek.
I do like as I get older, I want to like just like that sick dad humor, do that one year. Like, you always like once a while there'd be like someone like, a hay or a scarecrow on the stair and then he just gets up. I want to do that and just film people to scare the crap out of them.
I did that one year at my parents, like dressed up like, actually, so what we did is it was actually kind of fucked I did this, but I dressed up, I like put shin pads with socks on and like pants and shoes and then like a pumpkin head and like put it out on the porch for like 4 or 5 days leading up to Halloween. And then on Halloween, I put all that stuff on and went in the chair. So like the kids thought that like it had been there for like 5 days. So I was just getting everybody. It was a weird weird feeling. I was, because it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with that. I think there's probably something to unpack there. But even at school, I remember at school we did Big Brothers Big Sisters, and I volunteered like the one day, and we did like the haunted house, and I think I probably ruined a few kids' lives. But again, it was a blast.
Did you, speaking of haunted houses, I saw this a clip on another pod, but have you heard about that haunted house in like Tennessee?
Yeah.
If you get $1 million or something, or what do you
get? Yeah, if you survive, if you go through it, but like they can literally, they're allowed to torture you.
Yeah.
I sign a waiver that you can die.
I don't want to get
out of here. You're not, man. Navy SEALs tried to do it and they were getting like tortured so bad, they legit called it quits.
They just tie you up.
I don't know. Like you're signing your life away. Like they could just saw your ass. Like they could just do whatever. They're pulling your eyeballs out.
They just cut your arm off.
Yeah.
Make you quit. They just cut your arm off.
Would you cut your own arm off for $1 million?
No.
No. What's the number you think?
Cut my arm off? Man. Because then like I can't play golf.
That's what he's thinking about. You can get a suit, like all the money
I have. Nah, I don't know. Nah, I don't
your swing might anything. Get better. If you have one full straight arm, just lock.
Yeah, making my left one so that one stays straight.
There you go.
All right, Millie. Yep, cut off my left. It's fine.
Yeah, cut off strictly my left. Yeah, I don't know. That's it.
I'll do it for 10,000.
Other news.
Okay, how about this? How about this?
Yeah, what's other up? News.
Have you seen that question that's been online a little bit? $60,000 for the rest of your life. Quit your job, but you can golf every day. That's your job, $60,000 a year.
And yeah. You
golf every day. Are you doing it?
No. What the fuck? You're not going to be able to live.
Yeah, but I get to golf every day.
You get to
sandwiches at the clubhouse. We're fine.
Yeah, but you still have to pay for those. It's not like you just get to be like.
No, maybe.
So everything at the club is free?
Yeah, maybe I'm getting it wrong. Maybe it's like you get $60,000 plus like a membership. I don't know.
Anyways, but yeah, like, I mean, bottom line, you're still in today's day and age, you're dragging your feet with like $100,000 because of the fucking inflation. And
oh, look, Dan, sorry, Dan, you make a lot of money. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah, grumpy fucking Toronto guys bringing up inflation over here.
Hold on. I never said I wasn't dragging
it's
my feet.
It's a hypothetical, Dan.
Yeah, fuck your hypothetical. I'm not picking golf. I get to golf enough for work anyway. Come on. I'm picking job.
Working for the man. All right, buddy. Good for you.
Oh, don't. Cut this part. I sound like a douchebag. Cut it.
In other news,
I just got ramboasted. I can't wait for the text from this one. But I was thinking, what do we think? Did we talk about this Shane Pinto thing yet?
No, because I think he just dropped this week.
Yeah. So
dude, how about just they are just getting crushed? This guy
crushed. I love Ann Lauer. I'm so in on this guy. He's like the most authentic owner of all time. Yeah. He literally sat in front of the media and just like, first of all, he had two sick callouts on Gary Bettman because he said that he was in either of those situations, A, the Shane Pinto investigation, and B, the investigation into the Dadonov trade.
Yeah.
He was not made aware of them during the sale process. So,
he
said that at a press conference. So like, he obviously is a little bit rattled. But
the Dadonov thing, yeah, the Pinto thing's one because it happened this year, whatever. I didn't realize that, like, I kind of saw it this morning. You know, you like read things, you like don't know if they're like true or not. Yeah. So then I'm like, okay, click on it, I'm like reading it. And it's like, then Dorian like resigns. I'm like, okay, like it's all true. But the Dadonov thing was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I know. And then for them to do it now, it's like they were waiting for a new owner.
Yeah, like what?
It's fucked. It's so fucked. But yeah, the Pinto thing is crazy to me now that like, did you hear like exactly why they did it?
Cause it was proxy betting or something.
So yeah. So he was like in LA and like are in a state where gambling wasn't legal, and he wanted to bet on the NFL. So he had one of his buddies back home log into his account and bet, and like then
which is like illegal.
Yeah, which I understand if that's terms of service, but fucking half the season for that, like
it's like what, like. It's not cheating. Like what?
No, I know. And he actually had a another good quote. Let me see if I can find it. But like his quote about the betting thing was like, he's like, what do you expect? You have a 21-year-old kid who's making millions of dollars and he's bored on his phone and he sees Wayne Gretzky on betting commercials telling him it's okay to do it. Like he said that.
Yeah, and then the other funny thing is like the picture they were using for
all
like,
time.
Those got the bet365 on his helmet. What are we doing here? Like, you guys not like, you guys don't think about this beforehand. Exactly. Like, betting's all over all this stuff. Okay, he wasn't betting on hockey. Like, that's the other thing that's so crazy. It's like, okay, like, you're allowed, like, and the other thing too is like, oh, maybe you're not allowed to bet. But it's like, no, you are allowed to bet. You're not allowed to bet on hockey, but they can gamble on anything they want.
Yeah.
So it's like this guy has told his buddy to make a bet for him. Like it's his account. It's his guy that he like. Okay, if it's like against the terms and services, but like that's something that Pinto and Bet 365 should have to deal with, not the NHL.
Yeah, not his job.
Yeah.
But agreed. Outside of that, Donnie, what did you dress? Did you get any Halloween action?
I gotta be honest, boys. I'm not a big Halloween guy.
No.
I'm lower on it than I think other people. I whipped together a Guy Fieri costume.
Huge Halloween guy.
Yeah, it was like I just bought a wig. It was pretty mediocre. It wasn't a great performance by me this year. It's not my
That's okay.
Hey
Donnie, are you gonna be around November 9th? Are you coming back for that?
Yep.
Oh, baby. Pauly?
What's that, buddy?
November 9th?
What's November 9th?
Boston Levi's playing at Rivoli in Toronto.
Wow.
What day is that?
It's a Thursday.
I think I'll be around. I'll fly out the next day.
Well, we might have to rally the troops. I think I've got the whole work crew going. So if you're listening to this, you're in the area. Come on out, buy the tickets online. If you go to Rivoli's website, they've got it listed there. I think they're $20, but that should be a good time. Cool little venue there. That's a good little side note. Forgot about that. Another thing. I already got my ticket to the concert of the summer. Creed is playing with Finger 11 opening June 30th at Budweiser.
That's unreal.
That will be an insanely fun concert, I think. But outside of that, I mean, I guess
let's kick it to Dutchie here, I think.
Yeah, do you think? A lot of banter. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Off the rails.
This interview is brought to you by Lucky Penny Media. At Lucky Penny Media, we're a full-service marketing company without hefty agency pricing. We understand your brand is everything to you, and when working together, it means everything to us. You're more than just a client. You're a partner and a teammate. Our philosophy is simple. You grow, I grow, we grow. So here he is, Reese Dutch. We are pleased to welcome this native of Victoria, British Columbia, where he played his minor, junior, and senior lacrosse. He attended Stony Brook University, where he put up a ton of points, helped pave the way for a lot of Canadians to get down there. He would go on to be drafted third overall in the 2008 entry draft and would finish his career as one of a handful of players to record over 400 goals, over 600 assists, and over 1,000 points with stops in San Jose, Washington, Vancouver, Calgary, Halifax, and Saskatchewan. Welcome to Back of the Bird, Reese Dutch. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, fellas. That's a long list there, almost as long as Doss is.
we're competing here now, Jesus.
We get lucky sometimes where there's guys that actually have like a structured Wikipedia page for us to put some notes together on. Is all that correct? Did you grow up? Did you play everything on the island?
Yeah, man. Yeah. I my dad played here too, and he was pretty big on, you know, being a hometown kid and all that stuff. Six Nations actually came down to Stony Brook to try and recruit me over there for junior. My dad happened to be out there for the game and he chased him off. So I didn't really have much of an option, but you know, I didn't really want to. All my buddies were playing and
I love it. Well, that, I mean, that, you kind of hinted at it there. And I mean, just with your old man and being a hometown boy and everything, but what, how did you pick up a stick? How'd you get into the game?
In Victoria, it's just kind of a rite of passage. It's kind of probably a lot of towns in Ontario. You played hockey in the winter and you played lacrosse in the summer. Eventually field lacrosse out here is in the winter. So at the age of 12, I had to kind of make the choice between lacrosse and hockey. And, you know, as much as we all like to think we're going to the show, I thought I had a better shot on the field. So I went for that.
Where'd you play field on the island? Was that one school that McKay's running now, was that around there? Or what'd you do for school?
We didn't have high school teams. It's all club. I mean, okay. There's a couple programs now, but when I was growing up, it was just club and kind of sort of the same areas as your minor teams. There's a Saanich, there was a Wanafuka. They just had different names, but it was, yeah, virtually the same group of kids, just between, you just switch from box to field.
Did you guys have, like, growing up playing minor there, did you guys have like a good core that was in your age group?
Yeah, I was in Saanich. It was kind of, we probably had the most lacrosse players back then. Like we were sort of the team to beat growing up. That's shifted out to the West Shore now, just because that's a lot where a lot of the young families are. But I was kind of lucky. Like we didn't lose a ton of games growing up, which is motivating, right? When you're finding success.
Yeah.
You're gonna see Taylor quite a bit here. She's.
Did somebody take your Rice Krispie?
Okay, daddy's working.
That's funny. Is there any guys that you grew up playing with that like moved on to kind of play junior, senior, or NOL?
Yeah, well, quite a few. I mean, I'm just trying to think of the list here. I grew up watching Lewis and then his brother. Hopefully that really stands out from the junior standpoint. I mean, a lot of the guys that played for the Shamrocks didn't necessarily grow up here, but
yeah,
you know, they came out and played for the Shamrocks and were also in the NLL. So like Big Doss there.
Yep.
Yeah. That was a hell of a two summers. I'll tell you that. I was actually thinking, like, other than obviously like Paul and Gary Gate, you got to be up there as like the highest scoring Victoria native in NLL history now. That was just,
I think I'm honestly, I feel like I might be second. If I got one more year in there, I probably could have passed Gary, but
yeah,
wasn't in the cards. Yeah.
But, I was one of those stats. I'm like, man, you got it. Yeah. I was going to say, because then I was like, I was thinking number one, and I was like, oh shit, I forgot about Gary. Cause he kind of, yeah. I think people forget that he was from the island.
I actually didn't know that until you said it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the brother, they were kind of like, they went to Syracuse, right? And that was a crazy thing. Like the first West Coasters to kind of go out there and make a name in the NCAA Division I. So, I mean, Victoria kids growing up, it was Gary and Paul Gate. And,
yeah.
And that was kind of, you know, kind of, they were like the Michael Jordans of lacrosse to us.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Like everybody, especially for Vic boys. And then kind of to that, like to Stony Brook, like, so you're playing club, then like, again, that's another cross country trip for you. Like any other schools, like how'd you land on Stony Brook?
Yeah, I mean, to date myself a little bit, at that point you were sending VHS tapes to coaches for
That's amazing.
So there wasn't a lot of uploading your videos online and easy access stuff. So I didn't go to any recruitment camps. It was more word of mouth. And this is gonna drive me nuts. I'm solo dad right now, so I don't really have an avenue to
hey, you're fine.
But she'll stay quiet. Anyways. Sending out the video VHS tapes. The Stony Brook coaches were actually kind of calling around. I think they got word from asking various people. And so I talked to like Georgetown, North Carolina and stuff, but they were the only ones that kind of flew me out. And like recruitment wasn't a big thing back then. So it was kind of like, you felt ritzy, right? It was like, holy smokes, they flew me to New York and I got to meet the guys. So it just sort of was a no brainer. It was, you know.
Yeah, who was the coach back then?
It was actually John Espy who recruited me, but he he left, and then Lars Tiffany, like Virginia's coach, was my coach there for the first 2 years.
Oh wow, okay. And then who came in? Who came in for 3 and 4?
Rick Soule.
Rick Soule. Okay, and then was it Nagel after Soule?
Yes, I believe so. So Rick Soule, he was coach. He was there with like Crowley and McBride when they went probably the furthest that Sony Rick's ever gone into the tournament. So
yeah,
that's kind of, and then he sort of, you know, I like for Lars, like for Rick, it was like, we're kind of one of those middle schools that people act as a springboard to get to the bigger schools.
Yeah.
You know, Rick went on to Navy, and then Lars is obviously at Virginia and won the national championship. So
yeah, makes sense.
Paving the way for the boys.
Paving the way.
were you there with McBride and Crowley? Because McBride's like my age. Do you overlap with him?
I think McBride's my age.
What are you? 86. Oh, gee, I thought you were 85. Jesus. Okay. So did you guys?
So they were actually freshmen when I was a senior.
Oh no way.
Yeah.
You went early then, eh?
I went right out of high school. Yeah.
Oh, okay, good for you.
That's interesting. Did you what did you find like a was it a did you play a ton of field on the island?
I mean, yeah, I kind of probably started when I was about 12, and then we just played every winter. I mean, we won provincials probably every other year, if not most of them. Because Vancouver was really spread out, so a lot of the studs weren't really together, where we had like two teams on the island that really competed, so we kind of could stack them a bit. But yeah, I mean, we played in the winter. I wouldn't say, but it wasn't, you know, box was a big deal. Like that was
where
you focused on, and you played field because that was where the opportunity was.
Did you find a tough adjustment kind of going down there and starting to play like a structured field lacrosse?
Yes, somewhat. I found the tougher adjustment was like just personally, I think. I use this teaching camps and trying when I'm talking to kids that might be waffling or about going down and just how hard of a transition it was. You know, like I'm an island boy and all of a sudden I'm in New York and international students got to go down early, so the campus is dead. And I kind of freaked out. Like I actually walked into the coach's office, I think a couple of weeks in, and told him I couldn't do it. I was going to go home. And then I think, you know, all of a sudden I had more friends from the older guys. So I think he kind of put him up to befriending me a little bit and bringing me into the wing. So whether they were real friends or not at the start,
they still count. They still count.
Right. So it was tough, man. And it's going to be hard. And it's just, you got to kind of go in understanding that, because I didn't do any like prep school or anything like that. A lot of guys at that time were going down to Western Reserve. I don't know if you guys
know,
influx of guys down there, so that was, I didn't do any of that, so just a big culture shock. You go from your mom doing your laundry every day to having to figure shit out.
Yeah,
well, and just especially like you say, but like not only that, but then you're also across like continent too, like it's not like you're not even like a fucking quick plane ride home.
But now, you know, a couple of those guys ended up being at my wedding party and stuff. It's just you just got to kind of stick it out and put in your time until you get used to it.
Yeah, no doubt. So you, I mean, off the field was an adjustment. What about like for on the field stuff? Was there playing wise? Did you? Because I think I saw that you were playing midi at school, right?
Yeah, I was midi for there, and then. I mean, field stuff, like the game was sort of, I mean, it was different, right? We didn't really play structured on offense. Back then it was just box across on the field for Canadians. So it was an adjustment, but you go down and you play, you're practicing 6 days a week before you even have, for like 3 months before you have a game. So it didn't really matter if it took you a little while to figure it out. Cause it's not like an NLL training camp where you got 3 weeks. And if you don't fit in, you don't fit in. Like down there by the time. By the time you get to it, you feel like a pro. I mean, we didn't, like, again, dating myself, like I didn't lift weights till I got to college because it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't really part of what you do. Now kids are like dry land training at the age of 9. So it's just a different world, man.
No doubt. No, what was the off the field scene like over at Stony Brook? Do they have that Bordy Barn, whatever bar when you were down there or no?
No. We had Bamboo Bernies. We had a few. There was one like right off campus, but it was a commuter school. So we didn't really have a lot of, there wasn't like a fraternity, a frat life, a sorority life. It wasn't like party streets and stuff. It was mostly like the athlete community that was there. And then, you know, you made friends. I'm trying to figure out some popsicles here.
Oh yeah, get the popsicles going.
Yeah, so we didn't. So I mean, you're young, you're in college, you're away, you got freedom, but it wasn't crazy for us. It was more about the sports.
Yeah, you got the sports, and then you're basically like hanging out with the other sports teams.
Yeah, I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. There'd be when we were in the houses, we'd get back from a bus trip, like we'd have a away game or something, and then the party'd already be going at our house for 3 hours by the time we got home. So it was a good time.
Yeah, you love
that. Fire warm, boys. Keep the fire warm. So many places. Yeah, exactly. Is it Long Island?
Earth was never empty.
Is Stonebrook on the island?
Yeah, right in the middle, like right in the middle of Long Island.
So you're just jumping. You're just jumping coast to coast, island to island, then, eh?
Island boy for life.
So I mean, throughout your time there, was there a specific year that you remember that like the team kind of came into its own, or you guys had a good little stretch?
Yeah, my freshman year, actually, I think we got ranked as high as 14, and then we played Army at home. It was my first hat trick, and we were up, and then they came back. We went to overtime, and I was actually our goalie for his ACL. And no knock on our backup, but it was a bit of a tough situation to come into. And we lost her in overtime, and they were number four in the country at the time. So who knows what could have been after that. But it was during some of those crazy Albany days. So I never made the tournament. We always lost in the America East final.
Yeah.
So it was
who was on Albany then? Was it like Merrick Thompson and those guys? Or what?
Yeah, Merrick Thompson, Smallsy, Frank Resiteritz.
Yeah.
Davey Brock on the post up or what? Was he there?
I don't remember Davey Brock.
I might have been
posted up at the end of the bench, but
I can't wait for him to hear this. That makes me irrationally happy. Kind of throughout that process, obviously you're going home and you're playing towards the end of your career at Stony Brook, you're going home and you're playing senior. What was that feel like? We like to ask guys this kind of question, like the guys that get to suit up for their hometown senior A team, what's that feeling like for you?
It was good, man. I mean, I was actually drafted by Langley.
Oh, okay.
So that was back, you couldn't protect guys anymore. And Shamrocks didn't have a first rounder. So I ended up getting drafted by Langley, and then I kind of held out. And I mean, they were calling, they had Billings and stuff. And I just was like, man, I just been away from home for 4 years. I'm not about to move over to Vancouver for the summer. And then they ended up trading me to Victoria the day before the trade deadline. And then we actually played Langley on the trade deadline. And I wasn't allowed to play that game, but so I only got a half season in, but you know, holding out worked.
Yeah.
It was almost kind of nice because I had a month of summer before I had to start playing again.
How was that first game back after the month off?
Oh, it was all right. I was still working out like a college kid. Yeah. But I mean, it's definitely a different group of muscle. Like, you know, your arms are a lot more sore. That's for sure. You got goons like Paulie chasing you around.
Oh, yeah.
Who was Wally the coach when you came in, or who was coaching for you?
I think it was Wally. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I definitely played for Wally. I can't, man. It was so long ago.
They all 2008. That was your first year, 2008.
In for Shamrocks. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's got to be close because I can't.
I think it was because I don't really remember anybody before him.
No,
it was for half the season.
Yeah, and I think my brother played for him in 2007, maybe when they won. Or 2006, yeah. And then I was there 2010 and 11. He was there. So, yeah, it's got to be him. There wasn't probably no one in between. Yeah,
it would have been Wally.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, we're going to come back. We're going to circle back on Senior A, but I want to kind of go down the NLL route for now. So, when you finished up school, where was the draft for you? Do you remember?
Boston.
It was in Boston. Going into that, did you guys do like interviews or anything like that with teams?
I mean, anybody could call you. Yeah. So I had a few phone calls. And then we actually had a combine, like an on the field, like 40s med ball tosses, kind of like it was on the arena turf. And then part of that, all the press boxes up top all had a different GM and head coach in it. And then you went up and just kind of like, it was almost like speed dating.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. That's pretty sweet, actually.
It was really efficient. We were only there for like 2.5 days, and Like, and then the next day you were in your suit at the draft.
Wow.
Where was the actual draft?
I think it was at the arena.
Like
press rooms or something.
What leading into it, kind of after you do those, like the speed dating interviews or anything, like, is there anything that, like, I know it's a while ago, but like that you remember in terms of like funny conversations or like, I don't think they're taking me, or like a team that maybe had like a late pick that you're like, okay, I'm not going to be around, but this was a weird conversation.
Well, I kind of almost knew that I was going to the stealth because I was pretty, I knew I was a high draft pick. Doug Locker called me about every day for 2 weeks.
Hold that.
I think you know who it was. Paulie, you might remember Dave Bremner.
Yeah.
So he was doing the recruiting for Boston at the time. Were you on Boston that year, 2009?
No. Yeah. I was.
So dude, Bremner was there, and he was
trying to think about remembering. Saying, that's a long time ago.
He said they needed a lefty, so they weren't going to take me number one. So that was kind of, they just it was more of just like a, hey, how are you doing? Handshake in the room with them. And then Buffalo was like, they had like 37th overall was their first pick or something. And he was just like, hey, love to have you, but I just don't think it's going to be in the cards this year. And so there's a few of those, but I kind of knew that it was going to be a stealth pick.
Hey, when you were fielding calls from Walker and then you met him, were you as surprised as seeing him compared to how you talked to him on the phone?
I mean, yes. Like, how do you don't, I mean, when you build a picture of somebody in your head, you like from their voice, it's certainly.
Dude,
it's tough to line them up. If you had a line of like 10 guys and you heard Locker's voice, he'd probably,
I don't know if I've ever heard his voice. I feel like I've only ever communicated with him like via email or like draft questionnaire.
Right, there you go. Yeah,
does he have a high voice or a low voice?
No, man, like smooth talking, sounds super cool. So like I remember he was calling me like before the draft and I'm like, man, this is like, yeah, just sounds like a cool cat, man, like super chill. And then my draft was in New York and I get to New York and he's like, hey Paul, it's Doug Locker. And I was just like, what?
No, you're not.
Yeah, you liar.
This can't be the same guy, because I mean, all-time beauty, but just like, you know, everyone that knows Locker is kind of tall, skinny, like ragged looking, and he just has this like smooth radio voice. So I was just dying laughing. I remember like calling my brother, I'm like, do you know this Doug Locker guy? He's like, yeah. I'm like, I didn't think that's what he looks like. He's like, I don't think nobody does, man. So I was dying laughing.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you imagine this like slick back, right? Hariko's long, and probably, oh yeah.
Yeah.
And he's always in a suit. He's never not in a suit. Like, he's a well-presented guy, but the voice doesn't match. So, I miss that guy.
Oh, he's the man.
Was the team in Washington when you started, or San Jose?
San Jose. I was there for last year. Yeah.
Did you go live there?
I did. Yeah. I lived there at the Oakwood. Yeah.
Oh, what a setup that was.
I know, man. I wish we would have well, Washington is great, but I didn't. I mean, not like the Oakwood.
No.
Back then you didn't really have a choice as a rookie. Like, you had to move. Like, it was more blue collar than it is now, right? Like, you got these prima donna cover, the magazine guys coming in, and I'm sure they run the show. But it was back then, it was like, you're making minimum and you're moving down. I don't care how many goals you score.
That is actually true. It's like, that was kind of like, hey, you're moving down here. But I mean, Lomi, you should have seen this place, Oakwood. It was like,
this is in San Jose.
Yeah, this is still to this day one of the best living setups I've seen in the league. Yeah. Like a fully furnished condominium corporation, like 4 or 5 pools. Like, it was unreal, dude. Gym, basketball courts, like shuffleboard.
And would you work for the team?
I coached high school. Okay. Some guys did work for the team, but I coached a high school nearby.
That's not a bad little setup then. So you just go there for practice at the end of the school day kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. We practiced 3 or 4 days a week, and then we'd have a game on, say, a Friday night or a Saturday or something. It was awesome. It was called Los Gatos, a real, like, real hoity-toity town. Yeah. They were a lot of money there. You could smell it in the air. Funny story about San Jose, though. You know, like I said, rookie salary. I was moving down there. I came over Christmas for like a month, and then I had to move back down there. and they were going to rent me a car. And I said, well, how about this? I'll drive my car down there. You give me $1,000 or whatever instead of a flight and hotels, and then I'll drive down. So I did the drive in one shot. It was like 18 or 19 hours straight. So I could save a bunch of the money. But then first night, park my car at like 10 p.m. I had to get up and coach the next morning at like 9. I go down to the parkade and my car is gone.
No.
So I had my car down there for all of like 12 hours, and then I didn't have one for a while. I actually ended up borrowing one of the guy I coached with lend me his extra car.
That's not bad. What were you driving around? What did he give you?
Oh, I mean, no, he didn't live in Los Gatos. He just taught there. He had to commute across the tracks to go to
school. I get it.
You bought his car off him for $1,000.
That might have been market value around there. Probably why it was such an easy for him to write. I was probably getting it out of his driveway for him so he didn't have to look at it.
Yeah.
But it was nice. Hey, that was nice of him.
Good guy move. What was it like kind of stepping in? Like, do you remember your first game?
Yeah, Calgary. We lost. Wasn't the biggest crowd I've ever seen in San Jose there because it's a massive arena, and then you got like 3,000 people in it. It wasn't overly, nerve-wracking, I guess, is what it was. It was more nerve-wracking in the locker room. Wayne Gretzky actually came in before the game. He was in town, and he was just coming to meet the lacrosse guys. So it was kind of cool. So, like, he's been following the NLL for a long time. Like, that was 2009, right? So that was really cool. Had 2-4. We lost. Didn't get my first goal ball.
They just didn't keep the ball.
Nobody just thought to grab it, and I didn't really think about it either. I was all fired up, but it was sort of all of a sudden.
The game's over and you don't have it.
Yeah, the game's over and I didn't really know.
There's some guy in Los Gatos or whatever just caught a ball at a game and gave it to his dog to chew on, and now that's the goal.
It was probably Brad Hawk, the team equipment man. I bet you they did grab it, but he's still got it hidden at his house.
Yeah, he's waiting to get it. He was waiting for you to retire, and then he's going to sell it on eBay.
Keep my eyes up.
How was the team that year?
Sorry, bud?
How was the team that year?
We were pretty good. That was when we had Doyle, Zawicki, Sedgwick, like Sorensen, Grimes, kind of like we had a good core group. And then, we had the Paul Rabel and stuff coming in. We made the playoffs. We beat Portland, I think like 20-15 in the first round. But then that was that crazy game. We went to Calgary and they were up 15-0 going into the fourth quarter.
What?
Yeah, that year. They won it that year in 2009. I think we lost 17-5 in the end, but it just came out of nowhere. 15-0 going into the
fourth quarter. What is that conversation like?
CH. So you could imagine. I mean, there wasn't a lot to it at that point. It was more of a, first of all, it's like, we need to score a goal. It's just, like really embarrassing.
But, yeah.
It's not a lot of rah-rah at that point. I think there's a stat. I think Matt King was a goalie and he actually scored. It was some sort of delayed something and he scored an empty netter and it was their sixth goal of the game. So he actually has the game winning goal in a playoff game as a goalie.
No way.
Cool, right? Well, I mean, not cool. Cool to talk about now.
Yeah. I'm sure that was not a cool feeling the next day.
No, at the time it was quite embarrassing. I was like,
oh, that's great. That's a nice little trivia. That's a nice little.
Wow, Donnie, did you hear that trivia?
No, I just missed it.
Dutchie, you can tell that one again.
All right, my rookie year 2009, we were playing Calgary in the Western Final. It was that crazy. They were up 15-0 going into the fourth. Their sixth goal, their goalie scored on an empty net. It was like either the end of the quarter or delayed something. And we lost 17-5. So he actually had the game-winning goal in a playoff game, even though it was like at the end of the first quarter or something. But it's still like a goalie has a playoff game winner.
That is an insane stat. There's no way that exists in any other league.
It'd be hard-pressed to think.
There's got to be a rule, by the way, that like, to have the GWG, it's got to be at least in like the second half of the game or something. Like first, second quarter game winning goals shouldn't count. That should be like, it'd be a lot cooler if he's like, how many goals did this guy legit score to like win the NLL championship, for example.
Yes. I think there should be a different stat. Game-winning goal, is it the last goal of the game or not? Like,
there's a different category there. I see that. Okay. Maybe like a game-winning goal, or and then you could call the other one like a game-deciding goal or something. Switch it up a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a great one. But so moving through that, so did you guys move to Washington the next year then?
Yeah, we moved up to Everett. We played it in the Everett Arena there, Comcast Arena.
How was that?
Well, that's unreal, buddy. I mean, the town wasn't. It's a bit scary. You didn't wander too far from.
I was gonna say, like, I don't know if I've ever actually asked anyone what the city was like
there. It was pretty run down. Like, it was. Yeah. I mean, you get down there's like Navy base and stuff, and that's fine. But it was pretty, like, you didn't really wander the streets too much in Everett. But the arena was amazing. And I mean, I don't know if it's still, but at the time at that 2010 championship game, I think we set the record for attendance at the arena.
Wow.
But, you know, that didn't really matter, because in 2013, we had to move our game to Langley because we got bumped by Disney on ice. So
this is why we do it. What a league. What a fucking league.
Games getting bumped by Disney on ice.
And, like, I shouldn't say bumped, because it's not like they came in later, but I think it was just pre-booked. And, you know, like, we made the final and it would have landed on the same day. The league wouldn't move it from a Saturday, which, fair enough. So we had to play it somewhere else.
This happened with Arizona too, like, what, right? Where, what, like,
yeah, it was, Rochester had the circus in town, so
so the home game, the final had to be played in Arizona instead. Like, I love that. The literal circus is in town. So what year was that then that you guys went to play the final in Langley?
That was 2013. So we played back to back 2010, 2011, missed the playoffs in 2012, and then we played 2013, and it was up in Langley, yeah.
Unreal. Did you, and have you won two?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, was 2010 and then 2019 with Calgary.
Wow.
You guys beat Toronto, lose to Toronto?
Yeah, we beat Toronto and then we lost to Toronto. And I mean, we should have, I don't know. It was Bob Watson's last game. We lost the game 8-7 and the guy must have had 60 saves. I think he might have been there.
I remember watching that.
And then, you know, we had chance, like Luke Wiles had an empty netter. It just went off the top of his stick. Like, it was all it was just everything lining up right for Whippers last game. I mean, you can't, again, it sucked at the time, but how do you not respect it now?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Did you guys win right after moving to Everett, or was there a year in between? Right first after? No, that's a nice little tip of the cap for the Everett.
Yeah, we won the first, we were 6-0 to start the year. So the people jumped on board quick.
Yeah, that's always nice.
Hey, we actually have talked about Everett before on the podcast with Hartsey. Did you guys choose to go out together, Dutchie, or Hartsey retiring same year?
No, I did talk to him last year, and he said he wanted to play till he was 40. So I guess something changed. We just commented on like a training video or something. We had a quick little memory lane chat, but I guess it is what it is. I don't know.
One out, eh? So that year you won it in Langley. So did everybody? Or no, sorry, that was the year.
Won in Everett. But when we played in Langley, we lost to Roch by one.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Now I'm following.
Follow here, Dan. Come on now.
Listen,
you're supposed to be the host.
When you make the finals this many times, I'm not supposed to understand. Like, I can't. I don't know if I literally don't think I've ever been out of the first round of anything I've played in. So I need to. It's hard for me to follow this.
Championship you guys are talking about?
I went to a championship once, and it was with Rochester, and I played a single game that year, and I think that might be the reason we went to the championship, but I'm not pointing any fingers. Do you remember what the celebration was like after that first one?
Oh man, I'll be careful what I say in today's world climate, but there was a convention going on in Everett, not at the Comcast, but somewhere nearby, like CrossFit, like guys that dressed like in girls' clothing.
Yes.
And there's a lot of them around, and like in the hotel and like in the hotel hot tub and stuff. And I had some buddies from home down there who just thought it was going to be awesome to get in the hotel with these guys. And I didn't see it, but it's quite a story. We were at the bar, and then just remember sitting in the lobby as guys are getting up for their flights, just sitting on the lobby couch, like waving them off. Still, you know, just rolling in with the cup in my under my arm.
Oh my God.
That was a good one. It was a good one.
That's amazing. So then the team's in Everett until which year?
We played in Langley, and then we never played in Everett again.
That was it?
Yeah. Then it was the dark ages, buddy.
Yeah. What was that like?
Well, I mean, people love lacrosse in Vancouver. There's no mass transit to get to the game in Langley. So people like to go to sports and have drinks. And we weren't winning, right? We lost guys and maybe some ill-advised trades or whatever. But we went from winning all the time to losing. And I don't know, I feel different. Like, you guys live in your markets, but for us, I thought a biggest part of our success in Everett is everybody had to travel there. So you were there for like one reason only.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're in Vancouver, we had 90% of our guys there. And then it was guys are going home after practice. Guys are, you know, going home between shoot around and the game, and then having to deal with their like 20 people in their families at every game. It just seemed like there's a lot of like outside life. It wasn't just like you were there only for lacrosse for 48 hours. So I think that affected us. And then, I don't know, man, lots of things. You can think of all the reasons. We just weren't winning games.
It's so interesting to think about that, because I would imagine, like, you would maybe think that from a, you know, as you get older, from an outside perspective, it's like, oh man, like, now you have the opportunity to play closer to home. It's like, you know, that could be seen, it could be taken in two different ways. Sure, it's easier to get to the game and you can be around and stuff, but it's like, you don't get to get the escape feeling, or like the, I'm here for one thing to focus on and be like, no one's disturbing me during my game day nap. I'm going to go eat my meal and I'm going to go play this game, try to win this game, and then fly home and then flip my life back onto the other side of things. Like, that, I mean, it's an interesting point. I never really thought about it like that. It's kind of the first time I've ever heard.
Yeah, and I mean, we had guys that are firefighters working 24 hours, coming straight to shoot around in the morning, sleeping for a few hours. Like, it made it, I think, a little bit too easy for guys to live both life. And maybe that was how a lot of those guys could play. So I never would hold that against them. And I mean, even right now, if we had a team in Victoria, retirement would have been a lot harder of a decision, or I might not even have done it, right? Like,
yeah. It's
just live in the market. Traveling is half the thing I don't want to do anymore. Right. Like, we talked about training camp, but I mean, it's 4 weeks, you grind it out and it brings you together. But like, thinking about traveling every weekend for the next 8 weeks or 8 months right now is just like, I just was like, no chance. I can't.
Yeah.
So I don't know. In market has its advantages. I just think at that time, there was a lot of guys that it was affecting in a negative way for our team in Vancouver, especially when you're struggling. Right. Then you start looking for all the excuses in the world. And if we won, I wouldn't even be talking about it.
Yeah.
It is interesting with the Everett thing, presumably, you know, when you're in Everett, you had a lot of BC guys too. It's almost like short travel is the best kind of scenario where it's not that taxing, but then you still get that kind of feeling like you're right. You know, in a destination with the guys kind of thing.
I think you just nailed it. I didn't really ever think of it at that side of things, but yeah, absolutely. They could drive. Most of the guys just drove down. So it took 2 hours and then there you go. But it was not close enough where real life was still a big distraction for you.
No doubt. What are you getting in there, Lomi?
Little veggie greens before bed.
Attaboy.
Well, how's that bod feeling after weekend one? Is that we got recovery powder going in?
He's on mute. It's beautiful. You're on mute.
Fuck. We talked about it before we got on. But like, again, you can train as hard as you want. You're feeling good. But you just get like, getting slapped around, setting picks, getting hit, sprinting on and off, stopping and starting, explaining drills, explaining systems. That's enough for 1 2-hour span. Okay, sure, we can get through that. You do it three times in 24 hours. It, like, no matter what happens, no matter what shape you're in, like, you're gonna be limping into Monday. So evidently
Wednesday.
Yeah, I threw myself into a hot yoga class Monday at lunchtime downtown Toronto. That's the best move I've ever done.
That's probably good recovery for mental and physical.
Yes, it was. I did a whole lot of the shavasana laying around there, but we're getting there. We're getting back. But honestly, my water bottle just tasted like the aminos, so I just like the leftovers. So it was almost like the gross taste. I had to kind of fill it back up, but.
Yeah, Well, I don't feel, I mean, people are asking me if I miss it, and it's definitely not yet. Training camp is just zero part of what you miss about lacrosse, that's for sure. I mean, it's nice to get back together with the boys and see everybody after a while, but I have zero desire to be, doing 6 hours in 24.
Yeah, no.
We're going to see Dutchie sign, first week of the season. Classic bet move.
I'm not out of shape.
He officially retired
from doing training camp. Those calves can't get out of shape, buddy. Those calves can never get out of shape. Best calves in the league.
The toe drag can't lose. They cannot lose its luster. But let's kind of move on to maybe the end of the time there in Vancouver. What was the tail end of kind of being there and then how do you, because you landed in Calgary after that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was a few frustrating seasons. Our owner, we don't know the financials of it, man. She's from America. There's money into Canada. She's losing money. It was a financial decision for her. So she sold it to, obviously, the Canucks organization, who hired a bunch of local Vancouver guys to kind of run the team. And, probably bad blood, whatever, lost over from summer and just, it is what it is. I think their big thing was trying to rebrand away from it. And, the Stealth was kind of synonymous with Reese Dutch. So there's a lot of factors that went into it. I don't need to get into what's going on behind the scenes, but it just kind of was time to part ways.
And then for you, what goes into making the decision to go to Calgary?
Well, Colorado called. Kurt Miloski, it was pretty easy. He called me and he was pretty straight up. Almost like going back to the Stony Brook thing. It was they put the most effort. They wanted me the most, right? And it was just it makes you feel wanted and you respect that. And he, I had kind of texted Doug. I don't know. People can't get in trouble anymore. I texted Doug Walker, kind of telling him giving him a heads up before the league and before even Vancouver had announced it. And I guess he then told Kurt, Kurt called me before anything was announced, which I think is against the rules, but doesn't matter to me now.
Yeah.
Love that. So he texted me, called me, because I was you're kind of freaked out. It was a new territory to me, right? It wasn't like I was traded. They just called me and released me because we were just done with dealing with each other. And then, within an hour, he's calling me, telling me they want me and they're going to make a run for it. And that's what every lacrosse player wants to hear. And then Dobie's calling and guys are reaching out. And it was just a group effort. And
what a hysterical move to release you for nothing.
Well, I think part of it, I had a pretty good contract. Locker was good to me.
Yeah.
And they were finding ways and loopholes to take money out of it. And I wasn't having that. I wasn't overly polite and just, saying, yes, sir, that's fine. Take 20 grand away from my life. I kind of was that's not how you treat people. And it's a small world. So you think about what you're doing. And then I think they tried to trade me and my contract was pretty big. So it was kind of a tough one for people to take on.
I see. Okay.
And then when word gets around that he's calling teams trying to trade him, it's probably only a matter of time until you get released. Anyway,
they almost just start holding out, eh? Interesting. It's such a funny, funny league that way. Cause everybody fucking knows each other and knows everything. It's insane, but
that's what I mean. You gotta be kind of careful whose toes you step on.
Yeah.
It's also kind of funny how the players are like taking care of the least out of anybody. You know what I mean?
It's kind of wild. I think
getting better.
It's almost like it is to a certain degree for the higher end players. It's almost flipping a little bit.
Which is nice.
It's kind of wild that and probably on most teams across the board, a coach is making more than any player, which crazy. But anyways, we don't have to dive into that too far.
The other interesting thing that we've Paulie's brought up a couple times recently, which I never really thought about, but this is when you were going through this would have been a lot less teams in the league too. So the whole who are we bidding against thing is a lot different than it is now with 15 teams. If you're Colorado or Calgary back, giving you a call back then, that you're probably not going to go east. There's not that many teams, right? It's just it's kind of a different negotiating than it is now with 15 and people teams are always rebuilding or going forward, or there's kind of more classic movement, pro style movement.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, then that year, And that's the year you guys won. Is that right?
It is. Yeah. So it worked out pretty well.
Let's maybe walk through that, that last play overtime. What is going through your head walking out for that play before it happens?
I mean, it wasn't the play call. It was a rebound, but I knew where I was shooting it. Like if I could give a piece of advice to young guys, when you get in those pressure situations, have a bit of a plan, right? I mean, obviously you don't know what's going to happen, but good shooters have their favorite shots. And I knew I was like, even just before warm-up started, I was pulling it back short side nice. So you're thinking that in your head, or you don't have to like be nervous about it or whatever. I was like, if I get a chance here, I'm pulling it short side. So I knew where I was going if I got a chance.
Yeah.
Dixon rings it off the corner bar, you know, easy rebound, rolls out to Jesse. And then it was just kind of like the rotation of the bodies, it just opened me up backside. Like you could feel it coming. I mean, you know, yeah. Right? When you see things opening up and you're like, oh, I'm gonna be open here.
Start salivating, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Dutchie's just fully torqued, stepping into a short side one in overtime. Like, here we start the bus, boys. Let's go. Go fill up the beers. But speaking of that, the celebration, what's the emotion like for you specifically? I mean, you go from, like you talked about, like it's uncharted territory in the off season. Yeah. You know, you go from being released to, you know, maybe not sure what's going to happen next to scoring the overtime winner in the NHL championship game. Like what were the emotions like after that?
That's it's kind of a turning point in my life and my career. It was, we won the Manor in 2015 in Victoria. So that was kind of my last taste of success. And then it'd been a few like dark years in Vancouver, not racking up a ton of wins and sort of just mediocre Shamrocks. You win the first round or the final. You don't really have, we never really got a shot at the Manor. So it was going there. And then, yeah, then you're all of a sudden, it's like you get released from a team. You're like, am I ever going to play again? Like you just like, it's just so nuts. And then it was kind of reassuring that I was still doing the right thing. Right. Like it wasn't like I was just hanging on. Like I was part of something bigger and it was just sweet to be able to score the goal in the end.
On the goal, when did you realize it went in? Did you see it clean the whole way? Yeah. Did you hear the crowd or you just saw it right? You go right in and
you
then
had a, like Spangler, like they were, there's guys jumping to block it. Like the window was closing and it just kind of right down the middle and Vino kind of stepped forward, but he stepped with that. I think it probably was the wrong foot and it kind of made him skinnier. And it just gave me that like gap on the post there.
That's pretty sweet though, that you get to watch that whole thing going.
Yeah, I watched right it.
Yeah. Just that's, lights
and then,
out.
That's and then cool. It's just straight to Cowboys or what?
We were in the locker room for a long time, but then, it was SDC.
Did you, did you lose it all at the casino that night or what?
No, my wife was there, so it wasn't a ton of table time. We were in the bar, you know, drinking out of the cup. That thing's unreally heavy. They don't make it convenient to drag around the town with you.
Yeah.
And sharp on those corners.
Yeah.
Just a hazard.
Yeah. But I mean, by the time we got there, they were only open for like another hour. They actually let us kind of hang around for a little bit after, but then it was just, you know, the rooms are full of pints after and tons of people in the hallways. So it was, the hotel was forgiving, at least for that night.
Yeah. That's imagine so.
You know,
so
my wife and I had to, we had to push our flight back in the morning.
That was my follow-up question. Who missed their flights?
Yeah, we would have, but we wanted to. And then I was like, well, my mom's got the kids. So we called and bumped them back a bit. Money well spent.
Always is. It always is. So, I mean, from there, and then after that, is it where you did you do 2 years or just 1 year?
And where?
In Calgary.
Oh, well, then we had.
Was it COVID came in?
COVID year. So I tore my, so we won it. We won, I think it was like June.
That was 19, right?
Yeah, 2019, we won it. And then I played my first Shamrocks game like a week later and tore my Achilles. Ugh. So it was like highest of highs to lowest of lows. And then I didn't tear it. It just came off my heel bone. So I only had like a 7-month recovery. So then I missed the first 4 games of the 2019-20 season. And then after the 10th game, so I played 6, I think. And then
when COVID break.
And then they just weren't bringing me back after that.
And then you signed as free agent in Halifax?
Well, I was actually signed with San Diego for that little, when they were trying to do that 2-week bubble thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then that just never, like, then I ended up signing with Halifax. And then
when you went to Halifax, is that when you did your patella?
Yeah, and then first game, you know, three goals back, first star back on top of the world, like, thank God. And then second game two, probably 8 minutes into the game, patellar tendon on the
what was that feeling like? Like the I understand the Achilles thing. What was like patella? I can't even really picture.
Dude, that was, you know, when you like bang your knee bone and you just want to puke.
Yeah.
It was like intense. Like my kneecap was like shot up into my thigh. I looked down. Yeah. Then you kind of don't really think about it. Cause then I'm like, I like pushed it down, like lying, sitting there on the ground. Cause I just think I'm like, oh, I dislocated my kneecap, but I can like get up, get drag yourself off. But then I went to lift my leg and like the top part lifted off the ground and the bottom didn't. And I was like, okay, something's not right here. And then just flop backwards, dramatic. Yeah. Your brother was playing. I was playing against your brother, Paulie. It was against Toronto. No.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. Oh, I remember you doing that. I didn't remember who you played against. So that's
what was that? What was that recovery like?
I had to fly across the country a day later. That was miserable. And then surgery. I mean, honestly, again, I don't know. I guess when I get into the recovery, I just do it. I was at physio 5 days a week. Like I was jogging around probably 4.5 months later. Like I was doing shoot arounds with Halifax that year. They wouldn't put me in the game, which fair enough, but.
Do they do a graph for that? Or like, how do they prepare?
So I tore it at the bottom and the top and up and down. So it was just like this and this.
Oh, fuck.
So they just basically, like, it's all, like, I got, like, a fake. It's all sewed up with, like, permanent, whatever, stitch, I guess.
Interesting.
Hopefully.
Yeah,
so hopefully
permanent. Yeah, let's make sure that's permanent.
Yeah. They got to go in and redo it every 5 years.
Yeah, we don't need that.
Replace the laces here, boys. Just one second.
Yeah, so honestly, that was an easier recovery than the Achilles was.
Yeah. You came back to Halifax, right? Or to play again or no?
Yeah. Well, I went to training camp.
Yeah.
They had brought in Randy. So that's a bit of an uphill battle, especially with that organization. And it was, and then I hurt my plantar fascia in training camp, but nothing major. It just took me out for a couple of weeks. So they were just kind of like, you know, it's a bit of an uphill battle. They've had their guys, Shanksy was almost having to go do like the year off for firefighting, but then Colorado was calling, asking if they had it, like, because they knew we had extra righties, so they sort of.
That when they had 27 righties that year.
What's that?
That when they had 27 righties that year.
Oh, yeah, they're rotating through them, like
yeah.
Probably signed at least 12 righties after by the end of it.
Unreal.
Yeah, that was last year, and then we went to. Yeah, I was my first healthy scratch ever in Buffalo, and then the next week they traded me to Sask.
And what was it? And then what's your time like in Sask?
Well, it was good. I mean, it was fighting for a spot there. Like crazy thing is I had the OT winner against Saskatchewan for Denver that year, and then Denver beat us for a playoff spot by one game.
Oh my God.
Irony. Eh?
That's got to be another trivia.
That's another stat.
Yeah. That's crazy. But for you, I mean, I read it in, you know, in the article that was put out on retirement, you're away with the fam, I think, right? This past summer. And that was kind of like when you looked around and you're like, I think this, you know, being able to kind of really sit into this, relax and see what that part of life is like, that was kind of like the moment you decided that, you know, if you think you're done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the last few years have obviously been stressful, be it injury or contract time. And I mean, as you guys know, as you get older, you got to work twice as hard to accomplish half as much in the gym. So you just feel stressed and pressured all the time. It's not like when you're in your 20s and you're laughing and you're the guy in the cover of the magazines. It's just life's easy, life's great, and it's awesome. And it was just, I was fine. And it was when I was over in Europe for 3 weeks and I could just say, hey, I'm, you know, I'll get a couple works outs in and I don't need to train. And it was this nice little relief. And I'm still like working out and stuff, but the pressure was gone. I liked it and I hadn't felt like that in a long time. And then didn't play for the Shamrocks, and it was just nice to, on a Friday, like, you know, I don't have to get home from work on a Thursday and go straight to the arena. I can throw a steak on the barbecue and just kind of hang out with my kids. Like, it was an awesome
feeling. Yeah.
finds that. And that's when you know, right? Like, if the only thing you're enjoying is the 2 hours on the floor, then it's starting to feel like a job. And that's not really the respect lacrosse deserves, in my mind.
That's well put, man.
What, just, you kind of talked about, like, when you won the second one in Calgary, how much that meant to, like, kind of come back. But what was it like winning one early, too, and kind of, like, you know, not to put words in your mouth, but I've heard other guys talk about winning one early and they kind of think it's like easy and then you don't get back there for a long time. What was maybe like the difference between the two for you on like an emotional level of like, you know, you get one right away, you think you're probably going to win a bunch of them. Then maybe there's some doubt creeps in and then you get another one. What was that, the kind of the differences maybe between the two?
I mean, the first one's exciting because it's almost like I'd never experienced anything like that. Like Victoria, we were in the Burnaby days in junior, so I didn't really get a minute. I played in one Minto Cup and it was when I was like 17. It was my first taste of that real major overall success. So it means a lot in the sense that I'd never really felt that before. I had 11 points in the championship game. It was just like, you're sitting on top of the world. Like you're the man. I'm 23 years old or whatever it was, 24 years old. And you're just kind of, I almost feel like I underappreciated it, but looking back, I mean, it's not like I was like, that was easy, but you just sort of take it for granted a little bit. And then in 2019, it's like the back of your mind, you don't know if you're ever going to taste it again. So when you do, it's like, you almost appreciate it so much that it's, yeah, it's crazy, man. Like you obviously can't say one means more or the other, but they were totally opposite feelings.
It's interesting.
Donnie, great question.
That is a great question. It's you're
getting me. Thanks, guys.
I bet. I would imagine, man, thinking about just being able to win twice and then B, being able to do it at two completely different points of your life is pretty, that's pretty cool.
Well, the guy I always think of is like Tyler Seguin won. He won the cup his rookie year with the Bruins.
Yeah.
And like every cup winner usually has at least like one rookie. Like, what if you never, like, that's crazy to win one in your first year. And I don't think Dutchie, it wasn't your rookie year or anything like that, but I just think that stuff is crazy. Like, what if you never get back? And then you get the guys like Ray Bourque who win the last one when, you know, they've already played 20 years and that kind of thing. I just think that shit's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was in the finals 3 of my first 4 years. So at that point it was kind of like, oh, this is great.
I love this sport.
Yeah. I love this sport. That was 2013. And then I didn't go again until 2019 when we won. So there's over half a decade, which some guys only play for 6 years, right? Like there's a lot of ups and downs, and then to finally feel that feeling again was incredible.
Awesome, man. Well, I guess we've had you for like an hour here and we appreciate it, but why don't we'll close it out with why the number? What's the inspiration behind it?
Number 10?
Yeah.
Well, I was number 11 growing up, and when I went to Stony Brook, they had a sophomore with 11 and he was not having it. So 10 was available. And I mean, to be honest, it was probably Pavel Bure.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Pavel Bure. I was like, heck yeah, I'll be 10. Like, I don't even know why I had 11. I think it was just because I got it a couple years in a row. It didn't really mean anything. And that so number 10 means more, but I actually didn't have it until I was in college.
And then were you that for your entire NHL career?
Except Calgary as 18.
Calgary 18. Okay. Unbelievable. Who wouldn't give you 10 there?
The doctor, right? Dr. Manning.
Doc Manning. I tried.
Yeah.
I tried, but he had a newborn kid and they'd already had a little Manning 10 jersey. Like, I got it. I was just like, yeah, I get it, buddy.
Yeah.
And he'd been in the league as long as I have, too. It's not like he was a new guy.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Well, Donnie, Paul, you got anything for Dutchie before we let him go?
No, buddy. I was unreal. Congrats on, again, a hell of a career, and enjoy retirement, buddy. You deserve it.
Yeah, thanks, man. This has been awesome. It's nice to chat about it.
Yeah. It's
memory lane.
That's cool, man.
It is kind of weird. Like, I mean, again, like you say, you don't really miss a game right now. And I'm sure, like, not that you don't miss it, but I'm sure, like, as soon as game starts playing, you might start missing it. But that is kind of the one weird thing is, like, you kind of retire. And then, yeah, unless you got buddies in the game, you don't get to, like, shoot the shit about some stories and stuff like that, right? So then it's like, all of a sudden you have this, especially for you, this illustrious career that, you know, you can't really share it with anyone. It's just a pocket full of stories with no one to tell.
Well, thanks for letting me share, fellas. Yeah, we were, my wife's like, are we going to have a retirement party? And I'm like, who are we going to invite? Like, who lives here? Like, they're like, you know.
You'll have to do a retirement tour stopping in every city.
Or ask guys to fly in. I'd probably get maybe 3 RSVPs.
Hey, I'll come back to the island. I'd love to come.
I know you would. I know you would.
That'd be a hell of a party. Those three would bring the energy, though.
That's true.
Awesome, man. Well, again, we appreciate you taking the time. Congrats on an awesome career. I'm sure we'll see you in the game in some capacity. It always sucks us back in. So we appreciate it. And again, congratulations, man.
Thanks, man.
Talk to you later. Awesome. Thanks, Dutchie.
Thanks, man.
Okay, we're back. That was a great interview with Reese Dutch. Wait, breaking news. Rangers just won the World Series.
Oh, no way. I haven't even followed it.
How did that happen so fast? I thought it was like just game one.
Yeah, I think it's either a sweep or 4-1.
I think they won 4-1, yeah, because I watched the I watched Arizona win. Anyways, great chat with Reese Dutch. Awesome to sit down with him and kind of go through his career days after retirement. Like I said, sure ballot Hall of Famer there. Sure shot Hall of Famer. Yeah, I think outside of that, you know, with camps coming up and everything, that's kind of wraps up everything from an NHL perspective. You know, we sent stuff out on socials. The wife of, you know, Emily, the wife of Marshall King, you know, lost her battle with cancer, bone cancer, after, you know, a incredibly strong fight. Again, you know, we were talking about it as a group and kind of going following her on Instagram. I never met her or knew her, but seemed like a light to everybody. And I think when you read the stories of everything she went through, and to take it with a smile on her face and decide to kind of create an Instagram page that people could follow along, and people going through a similar, you know, issue in their lives could find, you know, positivity or motivation or kind of a light to look forward to. It was pretty special. So we want to send all of our love to the King family, to her family, to everybody involved. Obviously, you know, they put out a post, you know, to thanking all of the doctors, everybody out West that was a part of that. And again, obviously when you're going through a battle like that, you know, you can't imagine it, but it's, you know, you're seeing those people every day, and that becomes your family, is those, you know, the people at the hospital, the people you're surrounded with that you're getting care from. So again, we want to send our thoughts. We sent out a post yesterday, but it's just on our story, so it'll be gone now, but we'll get the link out there, you know, in lieu of flowers or anything like that. They want a donation to the BC Cancer Society. So we'll be sure to get that link out. And again, just know that you're in our thoughts, and the whole lacrosse world is behind you guys.
Well said, Lomi. Well said, brother. Terrible news.
Yep. Yep. Well said. I've been lucky enough to have Marshall as a teammate, and we love you, man. And we're thinking of you and everyone in your family.
Awesome. Well, on that note, we're gonna sign off for episode number 97. Again, we appreciate you guys listening. We love you guys, and we'll chat with you next week.